Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring podcasts on the Blue Wire Network. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System yet, then you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. Wherever you are across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's Unified, UNIFYD, healing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE System.
The MMA Gambling Podcast on the Sports Gambling Podcast Network is presented by WynnBET. WynnBET is now live in Colorado, Indiana, Tennessee, Virginia, Arizona, Louisiana, and now in New York. From boosted parlays to in-game odds and every major sport, WynnBET has what you need to win. Sign up today and bet $10 to win $200 in free bets. Download the WynnBET app now or visit WynnBET.com and start winning today. We're also brought to you by PropSwap, America's marketplace to buy and sell sports bets. Use promo code SGP on your first deposit to receive up to $500 in bonus cash. Head on over to PropSwap.com or download the PropSwap app today. And next, we're brought to you by Manscaped, the leaders in below-the-belt grooming. Use promo code SGP at Manscaped.com for 20% off and free shipping. And finally, we're brought to you by StableDuel. StableDuel is horse racing daily fantasy sports app where you can play free and paid games for real cash prizes. You can win as much as $15,000 with just one entry. Head on over to StableDuel.com to get started today. And of course, speaking of apps, don't forget to download the SGPN app. It's your home for all of our free picks and podcasts. Download the SGPN app wherever it is you download apps.
Howdy ho, Degenerinos, and welcome to the MMA Gambling Podcast on the Sports Gambling Podcast Network, the mighty, mighty Sports Gambling Podcast Network, episode 117. This one is going to go out to Jim Miller, a longtime favorite of mine, who will be making his 117th appearance in the Octagon this weekend, give or take. I may have rounded up a little bit, but it's around 117 appearances he's made in the Octagon. So this goes out to Jim Miller. I will be your host of this year's podcast. My name, the Warrior Princess, Jeff Fox. Thanks for listening in. And if you're listening to us on our MMA Gambling Podcast feed, thank you for doing so. If you throw us up a review, that would be awesome. If you're not subscribed to that feed, please make sure you do so you can get this podcast in your ear holes the second we drop it like it's hot. This is the part of the podcast where I drive off a lot of the listeners, so maybe we'll just skip right through that and get right to my co-host, because he's the one that brings the boys to the yard. What can I tell you about this co-host other than him bringing his milkshake, bringing the boys to the yard? Let me think. This weekend's event is the only type – he's the only type of person who would be excited for this event, but I don't even think he's excited for it, which tells you a lot about the UFC – event that's coming up. He's the guy who sells all of my jokes. You may know him as Man Mountain Gumby, or you may just know him as plain old Gumby. His name is Daniel Vreeland, and here he is. Hello.
Yeah, this event, I'm just going to skip right to it. Not great, and recently got worse. Which for,
usually you find reasons.
Yeah, I usually find reasons. And don't get me wrong. Reasons. Yeah, there are reasons to like this one, right? Like, I enjoy a David Onama fight, which we'll talk about. Joaquin Buckley, Abdul Razak Alassane is going to be weirdly chaotic. The main event, if it got weird enough, could be weirdly chaotic. Who doesn't love a chunky guy like Parker Porter? There's Jim Miller. I mean, like, there's reasons to like it, but like, I mean, like, this is a card where, you know, the majority of people on here you wouldn't even consider prospects. You know, you had a guy who I really liked in Austin Lingo pull out of the fight. I don't really particularly love his replacement. You know, you could say the same thing about Mario Bautista versus Khalid Taha, which was kind of a fun-ish fight, and Khalid Taha drops out, and I don't really love his replacement. So, yeah, it's just a weird card with, like, weird choices in matchmaking. Like, it's not even good choices in matchmaking. Weird choices in matchmaking. But nevertheless, whether they are weird choices in matchmaking or terrible choices in matchmaking or people are bums or superstars, you know what you can do, Jeff? You can make money off of this.
Shove it right up. Oh, I thought you were going to tell me to shove it somewhere. Yes, you can make money, and then you can shove your money wherever you want to shove it.
God, that was such a good response.
Well, hey, that's usually what people tell me when they lead up to that. And this is probably – is this your third podcast recording about this stellar event also, Dan?
No, I'm only at two. The primer's gonna come out tomorrow. It's running a little later than usual, so I'll have that for you guys tomorrow. Top Turtle MMA podcast, if you're listening to this, has already been out for a few hours. Yeah, because I released it before we started recording, so that's at least an hour to record it, and then it takes us a while to edit it and whatnot. So yeah, you guys could be listening to that while we're recording this, for all I know.
It just showed up in my feed. It says Parker Porter, David Onama, and UFC Vegas 48. That's what we have to look forward to on the Top Turtle podcast. But this is not a Top Turtle podcast, is it?
It's not a Top Turtle podcast.
It may as well be. My God. That's all this guy talks about is Top Turtle this, Top Turtle that. All right, we want to get down to the nitty-gritty, get this event over with. Any news or notes that we should discuss, you think, Dan? I'm racking my brain. I don't think anything too exciting has happened.
I mean, it's worth mentioning for those who are kind of bemoaning this main event between Jamahal Hill and Johnny Walker that this was originally supposed to be the co-main event. The main event, Rafael Dos Anjos versus Rafael Fiziev, was now officially announced, which I think has changed from the last time we talked, which was just rumored. It's now officially announced that that will be the co-main event of UFC 272 next month, which is headlined by Colby Covington on March 5th versus Jorge Masvidal. So, yeah, like we're still going to get a chance to see that headliner, just not as part of this stellar main card.
Yes, stellar. We also were supposed to get, Ilia Laatifi and Alexander Romanov in this card, too. So those top three fights would have been all right, actually.
I think Nasrat Haqparast was supposed to fight John McDessie on this one. And granted, Haqparast was moved to last week, and we did get to see him get the shit kicked out of him by Bobby Green. But that also would have been kind of a cool fight. Ilia Laatifi versus Alexander Romanov would have been fun. It would have been weird as all hell. And now, did you know Ilia Laatifi is rebooked since then? Not with Romanov. Have you seen this?
Yeah. Yes, I think we talked about it. I can't remember who it was. It was something funny, though. I remember
that. It's maybe even weirder. He's going to fight Alexio Linick.
Yes, we did talk about this. Yes, lots of fun.
That's a bizarre-ass fight, and I love every bit of it. So that's at the end of March at some point.
Yes, yeah. Basically, any fight, any heavyweight fight with Ilia Laatifi is going to be a wacky matchup.
Yeah. Remember that time he arguably beat Derek Lewis?
Yeah, that's right. He did, didn't he, way back when?
He basically did. You know, obviously the judges scored it for Derek Lewis, but not everybody did. It was very much in question going to the judges. Also, it went to the judges. Like, that already is perplexing.
Yes, I know. That is wild. MSC, we've got just announced AJ McKee versus Pitbull rematch for the Bellator belt, whatever. That's featherweight, I guess, belt. And then we got Vadim Nemkov versus Corey Anderson for the Grand Prix Finals, which is also doubling as a light heavyweight title fight. So we have those happening as well coming up soon enough. But Like we've danced around it enough, we do have a stellar event to talk about this weekend, so we should probably get down to it. After I tell you about WynnBET, naturally. WynnBET is now live in Arizona, Colorado, Indiana, Michigan, New Jersey, Tennessee, Virginia, Louisiana, and New York, capital letters. We're bringing the excitement of Wynn Las Vegas to online sports betting and casino play. From boosted same-game parlays to live in-game odds in every major sport, WynnBET has what you need to win. Be on the lookout for the WynnBET Win Hour each Thursday from 5 to 6 p.m. Eastern time. During WynnBET Win Hour, marquee games of the week will have better odds at WynnBET, giving you a larger payout opportunity. Sign up today to receive a special offer. Bet $10, win $200. Download BetWin Download the WynnBET app now or visit WynnBET.com to start winning. Offer subject to change. Terms and conditions at WynnBET.com. Must be 21 or older and present in the state where play through WynnBET is available. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem, call 1-800-522-4700. All right. Let's tell you about Manscaped, too, because that's always a fun one. Can I get a round of applause, everyone? Go, Dan.
I would put it in, but if I clap in here, it's gonna mess with my levels, and being the person who edits is like levels. the worst part. Like,
sorry, Manscaped. It says Dan says we can't clap because of his levels. But anyhow, regardless, I'm excited to announce Manscaped launched their ultra premium collection. Believe it or not, it's not for not. Damn it! See, you didn't clap, and let's just scrap the whole show. All right, let's try again. Believe it or not, it's for your not-so-private parts. I do believe that, actually. Talk about a leveled-up hygiene routine with your favorite manly scent. This is an all-in-one skin and hair care kit for the everyday man. It covers you from head to toe, literally. Manscaped is trusted below the waist that you can trust them with the rest. Join the 4 million men worldwide who trust Manscaped by going to manscaped.com for 20% off, plus free shipping with the code SGP. We all know how essential the Manscaped Lawnmower 4.0 is for that precise trim below the waist. Their advanced skin-safe technology reduces cuts to your most delicate areas. But now you can enhance your perfect grooming routine with their ultra-premium collection. This package includes Manscaped Premium Deodorant, not for your balls, but for your stanky armpits. This deodorant dries clear, is aluminum-free, and smells like their signature scent. Hydrating body moisturizer. Have tattoos or issues with dry skin? Dan does not have a face tattoo, which he should by this point because he lost our bet. But if he did, he could use the hydrating body moisturizer. It's designed to keep skin feeling clean, smooth, and smelling fresh. Body wash is to lather you up with their infused aloe vera and sea salt shower gel. 2-in-1 shampoo and conditioner to clean your scalp with an easy one step. Plus a free gift, a 3-pack set of lip balm that's made up with ingredients such as vitamin E, peppermint, and eucalyptus oil to keep those chappers feeling moist. That's 4 products plus a gift inside the Ultra Premium Collection. What a score. All of these products are cruelty-free, paraben-free, vegan-friendly, and dye-free. The best ingredients with zero compromise. So I recommend using the products in this order if you want to get out of pen and paper. People use pens and paper nowadays. Hop in the shower and scrub-a-dub-dub that body with Manscaped Body Wash. Lather your hair up with a 2-in-1 shampoo conditioner to keep your noggin toggin. I forgot to look up what toggin means, so I think it's a good thing. Draw off and spray on the hydrating body moisturizer to reinvigorate dry skin. Put on the Manscaped deodorant for obvious reasons. Pop that Manscaped lip balm on. No one is out here kissing chapped up lips. Getting dressed after... I still can't read, Dan. It's going to be a good show, man. Getting dressed after is optional. Wear one great scent all day long. Get that Ultra Premium Collection hot off the shelves. Get 20% off and free shipping with the code SGP at manscaped.com. That's 20% off plus free shipping with the code SGP at manscaped.com. The power of attraction is now in a bottle thanks to Manscaped. And Dan's favorite manly smell is probably the smell of bear, right?
Yeah, raw bear if you can. Yeah.
Raw, yes. The rawer the better. All right, let's get down to the Raw event we got at UFC Fight Night, Walker versus Hill, a.k.a. UFC Fight Night 201, a.k.a. UFC ESPN Plus 59, a.k.a. UFC Vegas 48, which is what I'll call it more often than not. It is going down from the UFC Apex Enterprise Nevada February 19th. Which would be Saturday. It is an ESPN Plus event, premium event, obviously. 4 p.m. Eastern prelims, 7 p.m. Eastern main card. So that's the positive about this event. It's not going to hopefully go all night, so there's a positive. All right, we got, what are we down to? 12 fights, is that right, Dan? 12
fights, that by my count.
12 fights,
yeah.
Okay. And I think we pretty much went through everything that fell through. Dos Anjos Fiziev's got bumped up to UFC 272. So Walker and Hill got moved up to the main event, plus 5 rounds. And then we lost Ilia Latifi, Alexander Romanov. We lost Julian Marquez, backed out of a fight against Kyle Daukaus. JB Pickett stepped in. We lost Austin Lingo, fighting Jonathan Pierce. Instead, Christian Rodriguez jumped in to fight Jonathan Pierce. And then we lost Khalid Taha, who was supposed to fight Mario Bautista. So Taha dropped out. Jay Perrin jumped in. The mighty Jay Perrin. All right, let's start off with, actually, I usually ask you your thoughts. I guess we've already given our thoughts on the card. Stinker. Your thoughts on making picks on it?
Not too bad. I had to go remind myself of a couple of the late replacements. Like, I know who yep. Jay Perrin is because he's a Massachusetts native. So I've seen him around the Cage Titans and he fought for CES the last time, but I think that was his CES debut. And I re-looked up Christian Rodriguez because that is a fairly common name, and I'm like, I know I've heard it somewhere, and then immediately after clicking, I was like, oh, yeah, it's the guy who beat up Tracy Cortez's little brother on Contender Series, and that helped, jog my memory a little bit. So there were, a couple of fights I had to, look up and remind myself, and then there one guy we're going to talk about in a bit on a hell of a layoff that I had to remind myself of as well. But apart from that, not too bad.
Okay. Yeah, I agree. I don't think I have a lot of dogs, but I tend not to have a lot of dogs. Maybe some things will change after we go through things. So let's get her started with a Canadian bantamweight. Chad Ann Heliger versus Jesse Strader is in the opener, the curtain jerker at bantamweight. Strader, sui generis is his nickname. You know what that means, Dan?
It means unique.
Yes, that is a unique nickname also. And did you know that Ann Heliger is a monster, the monster?
I did not know he was the monster.
No.
He is everybody else is too, right?
Yeah. Did you know that he's Canadian?
I did know he was Canadian, yes. I'm aware.
He's from Alberta, I think. I was going to say Alberta. Like I said, this is going to be quite a podcast we have today. I don't think I have any Canadian trivia, unfortunately. You did too good last time anyhow, so it kind of ruined the fun of doing that.
John gave me a little pat on the back, yes, and I felt like it was ribbing you directly.
Exactly. That's the best kind. All right, let's just jump into this fight. Strader will start with first. He's 5-2 with 4 knockouts. Both of his losses have come via knockout. He's 0-1 in the UFC. He used to fight up at weight class at featherweight. He's an inch taller than Ann Heliger. 6 inches of reach, which is significant. We decided that 4 inches of reach was significant for the stat capturing that I'm doing. So far this year, it's been 15 fights with the fighter with at least a 4-inch reach advantage. What do you think the records are in that, Dan?
How many fights did you say again?
15 fights. 15 fights.
I'm going to say they're eight and seven.
Nope, 11-4. So it's quite significant.
So it's starting to get significant. Yeah.
73%. So that is a little, that's something to keep in mind. It's obviously not the only thing you should go off of, but it's a very small sample size still at this point. So he's got half a foot of reach. So that's pretty big. He's 5 years younger than Ann Heliger. Twice more active a striker, but both guys have only had one fight under the UFC banner. So another small sample size, plus 205. The monster, 11-5, 6 knockouts, 3 submissions. He's been subbed 5 times, so all of his losses have come via submission. He was 1-0 in the Contender Series. He was just on the last itineration. That's the right word, right? Itineration?
Sure.
Iteration.
You mean,
that's how you say it. Itineration. I told you, this is going to be a fun podcast today. He's won 9 straight fights. He's got multiple championships in regional promotions. He used to fight at flyweight. So we have a former featherweight versus a former flyweight. Grappling stats in his favor, once again, small sample size, minus 270. We'll let you go first. I don't really remember Strader. He fought in the UFC, apparently, but I don't remember him.
Yeah, he did, and you probably don't remember because he did step in on short notice to fight Montel Jackson, which, by the way, that is an ask. Because, fighting Montel Jackson, already not easy. He stepped up on short notice, took the fight. Shouldn't be fighting somebody like Montel Jackson. But that being said, I also just have, not been terribly impressed with his, regional record. If you go back, it's actually fairly easy to find his fights because he fought for Combate, which makes it Combate makes their fights very accessible via YouTube and other ways. But if you look at his fight against Isaiah Gonzalez, who was only 4-0 at the time, he does win that fight in 2 minutes, but he gets tagged pretty hard on the feet. And two of the first things you'll notice about him in his defense is that he takes straight punches right to the dome. His defense is not high enough, and which is, I mean, why you get knocked out by Montel Jackson. His defense is not high enough. It's not tight enough. He doesn't take his head off the center line enough. All not good things. Also in that fight, Isaiah Gonzalez takes him down very quickly. which is not a good sign either, because like at least you could say if his striking was terrible, well, you know, maybe his wrestling's good and that'll help out. But even that like isn't particularly great. So I will be honest, when I saw Ian Hellinger on the Contender Series, I was like, don't sign this guy.
Yeah.
I did not think he was ready. He won a split over Morian Gofferoff, who is a really tough opponent, who out-wrestled him. But in the same sense, like, and Hellinger still gives me a lot more confidence than Strader does here, because he's been in with guys like Gofferoff. And, you know, his fight before that was against Brady Highstand, who you guys might remember is just went to the finals of the Ultimate Fighter and had a toe-to-toe war with Ricky Tercios and just barely lost. So, like, this is a guy who's been in with top-notch opponents. And, you know, I also just want to take a second for everybody out there who's like, oh, shit, like, he does have tons of submission losses on his record. You're right. He has 5 submission losses on his record out of all 5 losses. The last one was 8 years ago. He hasn't lost in 8 years. So, like, we can probably put that to bed as being his weakness and say, you know, he's probably fixed that by now. So if you're worried about the negative 255 line, I say don't be, because Ian Hellinger here, far better striker, definitely going to take it home here. So Ian Hellinger is my pick.
Yeah, my pick too. I'm surprised, though, that I would pick him, or the both of us would be picking him to win in his UFC debut after a so-so performance.
I mean, great matchmaking. Let's just say what it is, because, like, the UFC knows he's not ready. I will say this. I hated how many people they signed off the Contender Series, but they seem to be doing an immaculate job at representing their skill level once they put them in UFC matchups, right? Because, like, and Hellinger is getting Strader, which makes perfect sense. And, like, you know, Michael Morales got a fight with Trevin Giles. And, you know, Jelton Almeida got a fight with Danilo Marquez. Like, they got the right kind of opponents for each of them. So, you know, good on them for doing that. And I expect Ian Hellinger is going to have a UFC win.
There you go. All right. One, we're both siding with the Canadian. Another kind of Canadian, as she lives in Canada now. In the next fight, women's strawweight Diana Balbica, or Balbida, if you prefer, versus Gloria De Paula. Balbica was called the Warrior Princess, but that's my nickname now. And De Paula is Glorina, which I could have taken also. But this one is almost a pick'em on the board, a very close fight. Glorina, 5-4, 3 knockouts. She's been knocked out once in her career. She's 0-2 in the UFC, lost her last fight via TKO. There's that knockout I was speaking of. She is a Contender Series alum also, where she won. Striking stats are in her favor, and she's at minus 105. The Warrior Princess is 14-6, 6 knockouts, 4 submissions. She's from Romania, but now trains in my birthplace, Stony Creek, Ontario, where I lived for the first 6 months of my illustrious career here on Earth. She's 14-6, 6 knockouts, 4 submissions. She's been submitted herself 4 times of her 6 losses. She's 1-2 in the UFC. Dropped her first 2. They gave her a third chance, and she saved her career by winning her last fight. She also was in KSW, where she went 1-1. She used to fight up two weight classes at bantamweight, and then she used to fight up at flyweight as well. She's got 2 inches of height over De Paula, an inch of reach. She's a year younger. She's karate champ, kempo champ, kickboxing champ. Twice more active, landing strikes, minus 120. But Bita is my pick. De Paula has not proven to be UFC caliber at this point. So I like the very close line in this also. I think it's going to be a striking battle, and Bita should win that.
Yeah, and it's funny, too, because I actually took Gloria De Paula in her fight with Cheyenne Vlismas, or Cheyenne Bays, at the time, mostly because I thought Vlismas wouldn't be able to get her down, and I thought she was a better striker than Vlismas. It wound up being that weird head kick knockout. Yep. But ultimately in this fight too, I agree with you. I think Balbica is a better striker in this fight. I think she's faster. I think she's stronger. I think, neither of these two is going to try to take it to the ground, which I think winds up being an advantage for Balbica, because like, if you look at her UFC career so far, the only way that she's really struggled is she gets taken down a lot. She puts out great volume. As a matter of fact, if you look back at that fight with Molly McCann, she probably beat Molly McCann, except for the fact that Molly McCann took her down and got some work done on the ground too. So, you know, like when you consider that Balbica is like, you know, a bad sub from Leanna Jojua and a close decision with Molly McCann away from being, you know, 2-3-0, like she actually is far better than her record would suggest. I actually have this one circled as one that I think the odds are definitely off on. So you might hear it later on my recommended plays, although I'm going to be honest, my recommended plays were not set in stone before I started recording. So you maybe will hear it, but I don't even know.
I never have mine picked before we record. I always like to talk things through and hear what you think and stuff before I actually hammer down my picks. So maybe I would do better if I
maybe mine are, maybe that's why mine are way ahead of yours.
Maybe exactly. but yeah, I also like this line. We're foreshadowing, but yeah, I also like this line on her. We'll see if she makes it into the recommended plays. All right, moving on. Featherweight, Chaz Scali versus Mark Striegel. Did you know this is Scali's retirement match, apparently?
I actually just saw that on Twitter. Yeah. I didn't know going into that. I saw somebody say, I think it was it East Spencer Kite who posted something about
yeah,
it?
Yeah,
it, yeah. I know we both follow him. He's like one of the best reads in the MMA world. If you don't read East Spencer Kite stuff, like he does the best profiles of fighters out there. So go read his stuff and follow him on Twitter. But yeah, he posted something about it being Chaz Scali's retirement fight. I was like, oh, that's something. And I didn't realize it was the end of Chaz Scali, which is sad because he was, I think, I want to say one of the first three or four episodes of Top Turtle MMA podcast.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, I know. Amazing. The first one ever was Charles Rosa and Shannon Kapp, the owner of Invicta. But I think number four, I'm going to look it up while we're on air, but number four, I think I'm going to guess, was Chaz Scali.
Yeah, he has been around a while. He's not been able to fight too often, unfortunately, but he has been around a while. Both these men have identical records, which when you hear what the record is strange also. 18-3 and 1 no contest. What are the chances of two guys fighting each other with the exact same record like that, too? It's pretty wild. But let's tell you about Striegel first. Nickname is Mugen. Do you have any idea what that means or what that is?
Yeah, it's an anime character.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure.
Nerd. What a nerd. Okay, anyhow. 18-3 with 1 no contest. 14 submissions on his record. So we have a path to victory here for him, a preferred path to victory. He's been knocked out once, submitted twice, so all of his losses have come via finish. Still won the UFC where he got knocked out in his first fight, but that was back in October of 2020. He also was in the best promotion that's ever been on God's Green Earth, won championship where he went 2-1. he also is a regional champion. He used to fight down at – he didn't fight – this is featherweight. He used to fight down at bantamweight. He's 3 years younger than Scali, more active striker, plus 165. Do you know what Chaz Scali's nickname is? This is another thing I did not know.
The Scrapper.
Yes, I did not know that until now. he's 18-3 with one no contest as well. Three knockouts, 10 submissions. He's been knocked out once in his career, so he's only been stopped once. 7-3 in the UFC with one no contest, which it's and once again, my fellow Canadian, fellow fan of the basketball team I played on, E. Spencer Kite, and mentioned how it's sneaky how Scali's record is like it's sneaky good. Most people would not imagine he's 7-3 in the UFC.
Yeah, and also one of those losses. Well, I guess he would have had four losses because one did get overturned into a no contest.
Right, right.
The weird Bobby Moffitt one, which, I mean, you could say what you want. Bobby Moffitt maybe didn't get that sub, but Bobby Moffitt was probably going to win that fight anyway. But yeah, you're right. It's crazy that he's got a record like that.
Yes.
You know, in losses to just dudes who are kind of better grapplers than him. Is that fair to say? Like Mirsad Bechtik and Darren Elkins?
Yep. Yep, definitely. Anyhow, he won his last fight, but that was way back in September 2019. He's had injury issues. A bunch of fights have fallen through. At least one of them not his fault. But regardless, he's been out of the cage quite a while. Both men have, but him even more so. He's 3-0 in Bellator. He used to fight up at lightweight. He made his debut way back in 2009. He's 3 inches taller than Striegel, 2 inches of reach, striking stats in his favor, grappling stats in his favor, minus 210 for his swan song. But we'll put quotes around the swan song part because it's MMA after all. Go ahead. We'll let you pick first, unless you're still looking up if he was on your podcast and when.
He was. He was on episode 5.
There you're one
along
off.
With, along with Coach Stephen Wright, which was right before the episode 6 with Lauren Murphy and Sam Alvey, or episode 7 with Robert Whitaker and Tim Johnson.
Oh, yeah, look at you.
Look at that. I'm going to pick against Chad Skelly. I'm going to take Mark Streichel. Yeah. Here's why. I kind of alluded to it when you were talking about his record. What has been his Achilles heel? His Achilles heel has been people who grapple better than him. Mirsad Vechtik. I mentioned he got out-grappled by – I mean, maybe I didn't mention it, but he got out-grappled by Jason Knight, who was a pretty damn good grappler, Darren Elkins, Bobby Moffitt. And those are the guys who beat him. And if you look at the other guys he's beating, it's guys who struggled with grappling. Jim Ehlers and Sean Soriano and Maximo Blanco and Chris Grootsmacher. And Jordan Griffin's a pretty good grappler. But, like, you know, those guys are all not necessarily the best grapplers in the world. And now he's fighting a guy in Mark Streichel who actually does have a little bit of a wrestling background and is pretty damn good on the mat. So, for – That instantly gives me a little bit of a hesitation, but also, like, when you watch a Mark Streichel fight, he's very quick on the feet. So if he can just use his strength and his wrestling to avoid the takedown, I think he actually wins on the feet too. So we're talking about a guy who I think could choose to wrestle Chad Skelly and probably not only survive on the mat, but win on the mat, and then also is going to have an advantage on the feet. And, you know, when you consider those two things, sure, Skelly could sub him. But at the end of the day, I'm wondering, is Chelly subbing him good enough to buy him in at, you know, a negative 200 price? I don't think so. So I'm going to ride with the underdog here. I like Mark Streichel.
All right. Dan's playing the price. I'm playing who I think is going to win. I'm going with Skelly going out as a winner. Slightly bigger. You think Streichel's a better striker? I think Skelly is a better striker here, but I guess we'll have to wait and see.
I think when you talk about his whole body of work, like if you went back and watched all of Chad Skelly's fights, you might find times where you thought he looked like Mark Streichel, or he looked as fast as Mark Streichel, or he looked as nuanced as Mark Streichel, but I don't think you would see any of those fights recently.
He hasn't fought for 3 years, so.
Well, that's definitely part of it, but also, like, I mean, like, even the Jordan Griffin fight, he didn't look great on the feet, and that was, you know, that fight was so long ago, so I don't think we're – and plus, like, you know as well as I do, a dude with one foot out the door has never got the same kind of training camp as he usually does.
Yeah, it's true. We'll have to just wait and see what happens, I guess, on Saturday, because everyone will be watching this event with bated breath, and we'll see what happens. Before we move on to our next exciting fight, let's tell you about Stable Duel. There are never enough things to gamble on. And the one sport that runs 365 days a year is horse racing. Best part is now there is a new way to play the ponies, especially if you're brand new to the sport. Check out StableDuel, a daily fantasy-style app where you can play free and paid games for real cash prizes. Pick your horses, build your stable, and play against others to move up the leaderboard. Win as much as $15,000 with one entry. Don't know anything about horses? Not to worry. The app gives you clear data on which horse to select to build your best strategy. The app is free to download at StableDuel.com. Multiple games are offered each day with free games weekly at tracks all over the United States. Get in the app, create your account, and start building your stable today, or stables today if you want more than one. Invite your friends to play against you or play against our stables. You can even follow them in the app, and we can compare our own stats. Download now at StableDuel.com and see how many winners you can pick in your stables. See you in the winner's circle. Play, race, win. All right. I should say I'm picking Sky, but I don't like this the number on this fight, so this one you will definitely not be seeing in my recommended place at the end of the show. All right, moving on to women's bantamweight, Jessica Rose Clark, a.k.a. Jessie Jess, versus Stephanie Egger, a.k.a. Ham, and her nickname should be that, right?
Yeah, you suggested that last time, I believe.
I think I did. But
we may have
new listeners, and they may not have heard that amazing joke yet, so now they got to hear it. So Ham and Egger, we'll tell you about first. 6-2, 3 knockouts, 2 submissions. We got a lot of people with not many fights on under their belts on this card. We were against the third one already who has less than 10 fights. Anyhow, never been finished in any of the fights she's been in. She's 1-1 in the UFC. She won via TKO her last fight. She's 0-1 in Invicta. She used to fight up at featherweight. She's the inch taller than Clark, 4 inches of reach on her, judo and grappling championships on her resume, plus 155. Jessie Jess, 11-6 with one no contest, three knockouts, two submissions, never been finished in a fight, 4-2 in the UFC. However, she's won her last two fights. She used to fight down at flyweight, but she was having trouble making weight there, missed weight multiple times, so she's up at bantamweight now. She was 0-2 in Invicta. She's got multiple championships back in Australia, where she's from. She made her debut way back in 2012. Striking stats in her favor, plus she's twice more active landing strikes, plus grappling stats in her favor, minus 195. My turn. I will be going with Jessie Jess. She's looked good since she's come back from her injury. And I think she's basically got the advantage everywhere, no matter where this fight heads, not to mention the immense experience advantage over Edgar, at least MMA experience. So Clark is my pick.
Yeah, I'm going to go with Clark too, but I will dispute your claim just mildly that she has an advantage everywhere. I think she has an advantage on the feet.
Yeah,
I think she has an advantage in the clinch. I think she has an advantage, maybe even wrestling she has an advantage. But I think once it hits the mat, Edgar is a much better fighter. So
the reason
I'm picking Jessica Rose Clark here is that I think she most likely is going to be strong enough, smart enough, and nuanced enough on the feet to keep it from hitting the mat. If it did hit the mat, I do think Edgar is kind of a live dog here. As we saw with Shanna Young, when she got Shanna Young down, she beat the hell out of her. But she couldn't get Tracy Cortez down. So if you can't get Tracy Cortez down, who is not actually a bantamweight, she's really a flyweight who is just fighting up. Jessica Rose Clark, while she did fight down at flyweight, has bulked up crazy. She's looking real strong. I think she should have no problem defending the takedown. I think she probably wins this one by decision.
There you go. Not arguing with that one bit. Move on to featherweights. Gabriel Mowgli Benitez versus David Onama. The silent assassin, David Onama. Mowgli is 22-9 with 8 knockouts, 10 submissions. He's been knocked out 3 times, submitted 2 times. 6-5 in the UFC. He's only won one of his last 4 fights. He lost via TKO his last fight. He was in the Ultimate Fighter because it all comes back to that. Eventually, I think it's going to be – it all comes back to Contender Series because we talk about that far more often, it seems now, right?
Yeah, although, you know, hey, there's a season of the Ultimate Fighter coming up, my friend. They're in the house filming as we speak.
Oh, boy, can't wait. All right, what else can I tell you about Benitez? He used to fight at lightweight. He's got multiple championships on his resume as well. Grappling stats in his favor. Made his debut way back in 2007. He's plus 128. David Onama, was he a silent assassin on your podcast? Hopefully he wasn't a silent assassin.
No, he's very talkative, a great listen. You'll have to listen in and find out more.
I'm sure I will tonight. He is a finisher. He's 8-1, 5 knockouts, 3 submissions. So everything's a finish for him. He himself has never been finished in a fight. He was 0-1 in the UFC, but that was on short notice. I'm sure Dan will tell you his whole backstory in a second. He's 3 inches taller than Benitez, 3 inches of reach, 6 years younger. More active striker of the two, minus 160. All right, back to the stats. What do you think? How do you think fighters who are at least 5 years older than their opponent are faring this year?
I'm going to at least 5 years older.
Yeah, that's the range I'm going. 5 or more. It's been 17 matchups like that so far.
I'm going to say they're 12-5.
9-8. So that one has not
panned out.
That one has not panned out as greatly yet. It may that may change, obviously. We're talking small sample size, but anyhow, I thought I mentioned that because Onama is, 6 years younger than this fight. And Dan is going to sing his praises, just as the aforementioned E. Spencer Kite, who is getting a lot of shout-outs on this podcast, this show. But like I said, he went to the school I went to. He was friends with a guy on my basketball team. How small world is that, eh? And I didn't know that until, whenever we both started writing about MMA and we crossed paths again. And he brought it up to me. But anyhow. He was singing Onama's praises too in his column on his Substack today, saying that are we overlooking Benitez because everyone's so in love with Onama's performance in his first fight? That's the question he's putting forth.
I don't think so, because his performance in his first fight didn't just. It wasn't just a beautiful finish, right? It's not why we're high on Terrence McKinney, right? Because we're high on Terrence McKinney, and we're going to talk about him next week. He's got a 7-second knockout, and everybody was all jacked up on Terrence McKinney because they were like, oh, yeah, he's a quick knockout, all that stuff. David Onama didn't get the quick knockout. His whole regional career is quick knockouts. And what he did was he took a fight on 7 days' notice where he wasn't actually in the right weight class, and he had fought just 15 days prior. He wasn't in training camp. He was on vacation. And instead of, like, just getting the quick knockout and having the hype train behind him, he went 15 hard minutes with Mason fucking Jones, which is not easy to do. And he had his moments where he tagged Mason Jones. Again, not easy to do. So, I mean, like, there's so much to love about David Onama. He hits really hard. And I will say this. Are we overlooking Gabriel Benitez's skills a little bit? Sure. But I also think he's a great matchup for David Onama. David Onama is a guy who throws hammers, and Gabriel Benitez is a guy who gets hit a lot. So who wouldn't pick the guy who's knocking people out against the guy who likes to get hit and mix it up? I like David Onama with a knockout here.
I will go with Onama as well. Where can we learn more about him having to, like, cut his vacation short and come into the UFC, Dan? Is there anywhere we can hear more about that story?
Oh, God, you should probably listen to episode 313 of the Top Turn on the May podcast.
Oh, okay, good idea. I'll do that as soon as I finish this here podcast here. Did you hear my mic take a dive while you started going into your spiel about Onama?
I did. I was just trying to decide whether or not it was bad enough that I need to edit it out.
Now you don't have to, because I talked about it. It took an amazing header off of the desk here, which was great. I didn't even touch it. It was it got so excited about David Onama as a prospect, it took a header. Hopefully it didn't wreck your precious levels, Dan.
Do you have a exorbitantly small desk space?
No. Okay. It's messy though, but
okay.
Yes. But
I'll allow it.
Okay, good. Moving on. So we're both taking Onama here. Could this be a trap, though, Dan?
I don't think so. Okay. I really don't think so.
Okay, good. All right, bantamweights, Mariel Bautista versus Jay Perrin. The aforementioned Jay Perrin, who we spoke about earlier, he's a savage, in case you wondered. He's taking this fight on short notice, his debut in the UFC. What, he had a week's notice, maybe? Is it around then?
He's actually known for a little over 2 weeks. Okay. That there was a strong possibility that he would be moved in, partially because him and Mario Bautista are both represented by the same management. So they, like, knew they were going to need a replacement. They happen to have somebody who was in the right spot, and they were like, yeah, Bautista will take that fight because he needs a fight, and we happen to have a guy for him.
So they're fighting for their manager's love is what you're saying.
Right. I mean, if they're doing that, they're gonna have a really tough time because that management company has over 100 people, so they're probably not gonna win all that much of the fraction.
No, probably not. All right, let's tell you about some more things about Savage Perrin. He's 9-4, 2 knockouts, 3 submissions. He's been subbed once. That's the only time he's been stopped in his career. He was 0-1 in the Contender Series, 0-2 in Bellator. He's another one of those guys who has multiple belts on his mantle. The mantle I speak of every episode. Grappling stats in his favor, plus 230. Bautista, 8-2, 3 knockouts, 3 submissions. He's been knocked out himself once. He's 2-2 in the UFC. He lost via TKO his last fight. He used to fight at featherweight. He's 2 inches taller than Perrin. Striking stats in his favor, plus he's twice more active. Striking, this is based off of one Contender Series fight for Perrin. Minus 270. I will not take a debuting short notice fighter without an amazing pedigree, which I don't see Perrin having. So Bautista is the pick.
Yeah, and I don't think you should take somebody like Jay Perrin either, who gets tagged a lot. He gets hit a lot. You know, I mentioned earlier on the show Jesse Strader taking straight punches to the dome occasionally. Jay Perrin is about 80 times worse at this. And I would argue, too, if you went back and looked at some of his fights, there are some decisions I'm not 100% sure about. Like the Diego Silva one in Cage Titans sticks out. You know, he got out-wrestled by Dwight Joseph in that fight on Contender Series. You know, like, kind of a low level of competition that he's fought. And I don't even think he looked good in his last fight. So, and he's fighting a guy in Mario Bautista who I think has a lot of potential and has gotten kind of unlucky a couple of times. You know, he made a short-notice debut against Corey Sandhagen and then got tagged by Trevin Jones, who's a big dude. But he's also knocked out Miles Johns and beat Jinso Sun, so... Yeah, like I like Mario Bautista quite a bit in this fight.
Yep, as do I, as I said. So there you go. We're back on the same page again. We differed on what one fight so far. Let's see how we do on the main event of the prelims. Featherweights, Jonathan Pierce versus Christian Rodriguez. The aforementioned Christian Rodriguez. Oh, I forgot to write down Pierce's nickname. It's JSP, of course. Rodriguez has got an even better nickname, C-Rod. Isn't that amazing, Dan?
Yeah, it's great. It's almost as good as D-Rod.
Yeah, it is. He spells it C-E-E-Rod. At least that's a little different. He is 7-0, 3 knockouts, 3 submissions. He's taken this short-notice debut in the UFC, just like Perrin. Now, how long has Rodriguez known? He hasn't known that long, has he?
I don't know about that one. I only know about the Perrin one because I saw somebody asked him about it.
It was just announced yesterday. I don't know if Rodriguez knew about it before yesterday, but anyhow, it's going to be fairly short notice for him. Probably very, very short notice. He was on the Contender Series as well, where he went 1-0. Bellator, where he went 1-0. He's 5 years younger than Pierce, plus 300. JSP, 11-4, 8 knockouts, 2 submissions. He's been knocked out once, submitted twice. He's 2-1 in the UFC. Both of his wins have been stoppages, TKO and the sub. And they were back-to-back, actually. The past two fights are wins for him after dropping his debut. He was on the Contender Series, 1-0. Bellator, 2-0. He used to fight at lightweight. He used to fight at bantamweight. So he's right in the middle now. He's 5 inches taller than Rodriguez. More active striker based off of their fights under the Zuffa banner. Grappling stats in his favor, minus 320.
So I'm going to go with Jonathan Pierce. While I think Christian Rodriguez is kind of like an interesting prospect here, he really fits better at bantamweight. I know you said he's been above and below. The above fight recently was after a couple were canceled. He fought at 150 catchweight. But like, I'm pretty sure that's just because his 135-pound opponent dropped out and all he could find was the 150 catchweight. So like, he's really more of a smaller guy, and as you read the dynamics, Jonathan Pierce is a big ass featherweight. He's huge. So I think that reach is going to come into play, and even if Rodriguez gets on the inside of that reach, Jonathan Pierce is a pretty damn good grappler too. So yeah, I'm not giving much hope here to Christian Rodriguez.
Yes, Pierce is my pick as well. Like, once again, short notice debut, better resume than Perrin, but Pierce is probably a better fighter than Bautista too. So anyhow, Pierce is the pick for that. So we differed on one. We're on the same page for the other. Fights that were on the same page this year, I like to throw out my stats. Overall, consensus since, 2020, I think I started doing stats. We're 60% still for fights we agree on. But this year, I think we're doing even better. 63, so we're a little bit better this year. So we should have a pretty good prelims there, Dan, because we agreed on a bunch of stuff. So all right. We also can agree on our amazing sponsors. I'll tell you about the last couple here, and then we'll go to our I shouldn't say sponsor-free main card, but I won't talk about sponsors during the main card. PropSwap. We're brought to you by PropSwap, where America buys and sells sports bets. The Bengals defy the odds this season by reaching the Super Bowl, but Cincinnati bettors fell one game short, unless you were one of the smart bettors who sold on PropSwap. Dan told everyone last week to hang on to their Bengals.
Hey, it was close. One possession game.
It's true. Prop swappers made huge profits last week when they sold their Bengals Super Bowl tickets, like Tim from Ohio. What a sellout. An Ohioan? Is that how you say it, Dan? An Ohioan?
I think it's a Hawaiian.
A Hawaiian, yes. Tim from Hawaii, who sold his $100 40-1 Bengals ticket for $1,500 on Prop Swap. See, he turned out okay, that guy, Tim. He ended up all right there. PropSwap has thousands of buyers across the country, so you'll always find the best odds and collect the most money for your bets. Hurry and download the free PropSwap app today, because PropSwap has fantastic features like filtering listed tickets based on the best value, a free activity feed to stay in the know with all the big sales and red-hot tickets for sale, the loyalty rewards program that turns your ticket sales into extra bonus cash, and the first deposit cash match. Use promo code SGP on your first deposit, and PropSwap will match your deposit up to $500. Join the real sports bettors on PropSwap, where America buys and sells sports bets. Also, if you haven't already, grab the SGPN app in the App Store or Google Play. It gives you easy access to all of our picks, all of our podcasts, all of our contest giveaways, all that good stuff. And if you could throw us up an app review after you download it, tell the rest of the world how amazing we are. That would be great. All right. We've got a 5-fight main card, beginning with this fight. Probably should be the co-main event. Middleweights Joaquin Buckley versus Abdul Razak Al-Hassan. Al-Hassan is Judo Thunder. Buckley is New Mansa. What does that mean, Dan?
I have no idea. I couldn't begin to tell you.
Neither do I. I know what Judo Thunder means. I was going to actually take that nickname, but I thought Warrior Princess probably fits a bit better for me.
Yeah, I'm like Judo Thunder for you too.
Yeah, maybe
anything with Thunder, really.
Yep, it's true. It's true. All right, let's tell you about Judo Thunder first. 11-4, 11 knockouts. So everything is a knockout for him. All of his wins, he's been knocked out himself once. He's 5-4 in the UFC. However, he's gone on a skid as of late. He's gone 1-3 over his last four fights. However, he did win his last fight via knockout. He used to fight at welterweight. That's hard to believe that he was a welterweight at some point, but he was. He was missing weight there, so I guess it's not that hard to believe. He's at plus 125 if you want him. Buckley, 13-4, 10 knockouts. He's been knocked out himself three times. He's 3-2 in the UFC. All of his wins have come via knockout, including his last fight where he won via knockout. He's 3-2 in Bellator. He also used to be at welterweight. He's got 3 inches of reach on Al-Hassan. He's 9 years younger. He's a more active striker, better grappling stats, minus 155. Should be a fun fight. I like this one. I'm going to go with Buckley. I don't like how he won his last fight, but Al-Hassan has not looked as good as he did in the earlier parts of his career. Plus, Buckley's 9 years younger than him. Pretty similar skill sets, I would say, to these two guys. So they both like the slang and bang. So I'll go with the younger guy who is on a pretty good, not a super great streak, but 3-2 is all right. And he knocks everybody out. So I'm rambling on. Buckley's the pick.
Yeah, I'm going to go with Abdulrazak Al-Hassan.
Okay. It's kind of a toss-up, this fight.
It's a tough fight, but I'll say this. You know, you mentioned the 3-2 and that he's doing pretty well. But if you look at those two losses, they are really ugly losses. I mean, like, granted, Kevin Holland, no slouch, right? Like, Kevin Holland's not somebody we should make sound like a bad loss. But he got absolutely picked apart on the feet on that fight. Like, he didn't look like he belonged in a boxing ring with Kevin Holland. Alessio De Jericho is not known as a dude with tons of power and head kicked him into oblivion. And granted, Joaquin Buckley is a guy who can go in and swing, like you said, and he can knock out people like he did Jordan Wright, who, you know, I'm very high on. But
you sure are.
You know, like, with the exception of Jordan Wright, none of these guys are in the UFC anymore, right? Antonio Arroyo, Impa Kasangane, now gone. So, like, that's not really – doesn't make you feel good. Whereas, meanwhile, the losses of Abdulrazak Al-Hassan are buoyed since the losses, right? Chaos Williams – on the up and up. That dude is killing it. Jacob Malkin just turned in another great grappling performance, which is what he did to Abdulrazak Al-Hassan. Meanwhile, Abdulrazak Al-Hassan head kick knocked out the guy who head kick knocked out Joaquin Buckley. So I think he's got power just like Buckley does. I actually think he's a touch better in terms of technical boxing, and Buckley leaves himself open to counter strikes more than Abdulrazak Al-Hassan does, which is why we've seen him be knocked out multiple times. And we've only ever seen Chaos Williams, who throws, to steal my term from before, absolute hammers, be the only guy to knock out Abdulrazak Al-Hassan. I'm going to go with the underdog here. He is a whole bunch older, but as you said, that's not really panning out too much right now. And I think the older guy gets it done here.
Speaking of whole bunch older, let's move on to Jim Miller, who we were talking about before. Yes, he's still in the UFC. He's fighting Iron Mata, Nicholas Mata, who had, this is what, his third or fourth UFC fight? That's the first three were scratched. He's finally making his debut against Miller, who he was supposed to fight earlier this year, and then Miller got COVID. I think we talked about Miller's nickname being A-10, which I've never heard him called ever, and I don't know anything about it. Have we discussed this before? Do you have any info on this nickname?
I don't. I remember it appearing like probably like 5 years ago, though, and being like, what? Now it's still there, and I hear Bruce Buffer say it, but I don't ever hear
anybody. Well, then it's legit then, right?
I mean, maybe. Yeah, sure. you know my stance on Bruce Buffer.
I do. Bruce Buffer, Sure Dog.
We've got beef with Bruce Buffer, Sure Dog, and
Jordan Wright.
And Jordan Wright.
Macy Barber.
Macy Barber.
Actually, it's quite a big list, but
that right there is the Mount Rushmore of the true MMA gambling podcast hate.
It's true. Someone do a sketch for us.
While you're at it, add my father-in-law.
Oh my God, that's right. That's crazy. Oh my God, Dan. I'm going to send this to him.
Anyway, talk about Jim Miller.
I'm going to send this episode to him. Is it A-10 because he's an Atlantic 10 fan? Does the Atlantic 10 still exist?
I mean, it does, and he's okay. From the Atlantic region, right? So maybe it has
maybe
something to do with
UMass.
That. I don't
maybe he was a big Marcus Camby fan back then.
I don't think that's it.
No. Well, have him on. He's been on your show before, hasn't he?
He has. We didn't talk about UMass basketball.
Well, you should. Next time you're on there, make sure you do that.
I'm all on right. It. All right.
Let's break down the fight. He's not going anywhere, so you have plenty of time to get him on here. He still plans on fighting at UFC 300 because he was on UFC 100, UFC 200. So what? That's 29 events away, so basically 29 months away. I think he could last another 2.5 years. So
yeah, I have no reason to think he's one of those guys who hasn't taken a lot of abuse. You know what I mean? Like every time somebody sees that Andre Arlovsky's like, oh, I can fight another 5 years, they're like, dude, he's taken so much abuse. And he has, but not lately. But even if you go back, he has. Whereas Jim Miller didn't even take the abuse early in his career, and he certainly hasn't taken it lately.
Nope. Very, very true. Watch the UFC book him like for some meaningless fight night card a week before UFC 300 watch. No, they wouldn't do him dirty like that. Let's tell you about Jim Miller. This is fight 51 for him. I thought he had fought 117 times in the UFC, but I was incorrect there. So for his career, he's 33-16 with one no contest, 5 knockouts, 18 submissions. He's been only knocked out twice, so there you go, 51 fights. Speaking of him not taking damage, he's only been knocked out 2 times, submitted 3 times. The UFC, 22-15-1 with one no contest. That's what the one would be. And he has the records for all the longevity records, fight time records, number of times fighting in the octagon, all that is his and his alone. He's 3-2 over his last 5 fights, won his last fight via knockout. He made his debut back in 2008. He had multiple regional championships leading up to that. His pro debut was 2005. He's got an inch reach over Mata, grappling stats in his favor, plus 145. Nicholas Mata, 12-3, 8 knockouts. He's been knocked out twice, submitted once, so all of his losses have come via finish. This is his long-awaited debut. He's not fought since November 2020. He was 1-0 in the Contender Series. He's won 3 straight fights. He also was in the Ultimate Fighter, which I did not realize until just last night, 6 or 7 years ago, 2015, I believe, where he went 1-1. He made his pro debut in 2012, so he's no spring chicken. He's still 10 years younger, though, than Miller and an inch taller, minus 185. What can you tell me about Mata? Because I'm probably have seen him on Contender Series. I probably saw him on Tough, but I don't remember things.
Yeah, I mean, it was a long time ago with Tough, so it's hard to gauge whether or not that version of him still exists. You know, what I can tell you about him is he does seem to be pretty well-rounded. It seems like he's got multiple facets to his game. Not a ton of finishing ability. I mean, you can go back and see some knockouts. He did knock out Joe Selecki, which is worth noting. But in kind of his other fights, you know, when he was on Contender Series and such, a little bit more of a grinder in some of those fights and willing to win fights like that. He had a little bit of trouble with grappling on the Ultimate Fighter, I can remember back then. But again, that was a long time ago. So whether or not that still holds up is kind of up in the air. As far as this fight goes, though, I'm just going to be really honest. I can't imagine taking a dude on his debut who hasn't looked like an absolute murderer to beat an experienced guy like Jim Miller. I just can't imagine that, right? He is younger. He is more athletic. You're going to get plus 155 on Jim Miller against a guy who's never set foot in the octagon. I'm taking Jim Miller, right? Am I crazy to say that?
Damn it, you're taking my underdog pick, Dan. I'm taking Dan Miller. Not Dan Miller.
Don't take Dan Miller. He's not as good.
Oh, he hasn't fought for a long time. I will take Jim Miller. No, I'm taking him too. Mata, I was hoping you weren't going to say something about Mata that would blow me away, because I don't see anything in his past that blows me away or makes me think he's going to steamroll Jim Miller. And Jim Miller hasn't his performances of late has shown that he's not in a position to be steamrolled by anyone at this point anyhow.
Yeah, I 100% agree.
Well, damn it, Dan is on board with my underdog. All right, let's move on. Chunky guy fight. We love our chunky guys. We don't seem to get as many chunky guys, or are we just not talking about chunky guys? No, I don't think we're getting
I think we've had less chunky guys in the calendar year.
Yeah, it's true. Even though last weekend we had Derek Lewis tie Tuivasa, so who are we to say? This is Peter Parker Porter, I call him, versus Alain Baudot. I got to talk French. Alain Baudot, right, Dan?
Yeah, it's Alain Baudot.
He's the Black Samurai. He is 8-2 with 1 no contest. He's won 7 fights via knockout. He's been knocked out himself twice, so all of his losses are knockout. He's 0-1 with 1 no contest in the UFC. The no contest originally was a TKO loss for him before it got overturned. So he's been knocked out in both of his UFC fights. He's 3 inches taller than Porter, 4 inches of reach, 3 years younger, plus 205. Peter Parker Porter is 11-6, 5 knockouts, 3 submissions. He's been knocked out 3 times, submitted 2 times. 2-1 in the UFC. He's won his last two fights after dropping his debut. He was 1-1 in Bellator. He was a regional champ as well. He made his debut back in 2007. Based on the last weigh-ins, he was 16 pounds heavier than Baudot. Striking and active striking stats in his favor, grappling stats in his favor, minus 270. I don't like that kind of number on a heavyweight fight, but I will be taking Porter. Baudot has not shown that he can hang out on this level, while Porter actually is dispatched a couple of opponents in a row. So Porter's the pick.
Yeah, I will say this too. If you're looking to make this line a little juicier because you don't really like it too, and I'll just slip you a prop here because I don't plan on making this a recommended play, and I'm just going to beat you to the props question. Parker Porter actually has a phenomenal jiu-jitsu game. We haven't gotten to see too much of it here, but Baudot is a kickboxer. I think we're going to see a lot more of the grappling of Porter, and if you look back at his regional scene, he's actually got a bunch of finishes that way. If you're looking for him by submission, in a lot of books, it's listed at plus 650. He's listed at knockout at less than plus 150. So they really don't have a good scouting report on how good his submission game is. So I think if you play that's really the ticket to getting some good value on him.
So you're saying you're smarter than the bookies, Dan?
In this case, yes.
Wow, plus 650. That's some nice degen. That's a degen number if I ever heard one. So, all right, we're both picking Porter again. Boy, this is turning into we're different in 2 fights. I guess it's not that a huge deal. All right, this is our co-main event, everyone, after all these fights fell through. And it can't even be a normal fight. It's got to be a catchweight fight, too, for crying out loud. 195-pound fight, just what we asked for, 195-pound fight between Kyle Daukaus and Jamie Pickett, of course. Jamie, the Night Wolf Pickett, I won't howl too loud because Dan has levels to twirl. that could be the name of the podcast, Levels. It's all about the levels, Dan.
There's levels to this game.
And that's a Seinfeld reference, too. Remember when Kramer's...
He wants levels. Yeah, everything is levels. Yeah.
Amazing. All right. The Night Wolf, 13-6, 8 knockouts, 1 submission. He's been knocked out once, submitted twice. He's 2-2 in the UFC. He's won 2 straight fights, though. You may have said, weren't you guys just talking about this here, Night Wolf, a few weeks ago? Yes. In fact, we were. Actually, he fought a month ago, to this day almost, January 15th. He fought. This would be a short-notice fight. I didn't mark that down, but this would be a short-notice fight for him. He was 1-2 on the Contender Series. Who gets to fight 3 times in the Contender Series, Dan? Is there a story behind that?
Just Jamie Pickett. I think they liked how physically strong he was. He is like a freaking specimen when it comes to as strong as he is. So I think they saw the losses. And not to mention, the losses were to good guys. Charles Byrd and Punahele Soriano. Byrd didn't stick around the UFC too long because he was a little bit older. But he was a good grappler. And Puna obviously has done very well for himself in the UFC.
They're like, damn it, we want to sign this guy. Win a fight, damn it. We're going to keep sending you out there if you win a fight. So he won a fight, so here he is. He used to fight at light heavyweight. He made his debut way back in 2011. He's got 4 inches of reach on Daukaus, plus 225. As I said, this will be a short-notice fight since he just fought a month ago. Daukaus 10-2 with 1 no contest, 8 submissions on his resume. He's never been finished in a fight. He's 1-2 with 1 no contest in the UFC. He went loss, win, loss, and then a no contest over his UFC career. He was 1-0 in the Contender Series. He was a CFFC champ. He's an inch taller than Pickett, 5 years younger. Striking stats in his favor, grappling stats in his favor, minus 250. Tell me why I shouldn't pick Daukaus in this one, Dan, because he's my pick.
I won't tell you why you shouldn't pick Daukaus. I have no business telling you why you shouldn't. Yeah, well, and also I will say this. When we broke down why do you think – you should pick Ugly Man Joe to beat Jamie Pickett last month. We said Ugly Man Joe will have a grappling advantage, and we knew he would. And we said pretty much the only thing preventing him from winning the fight, if there was anything, and it ultimately did, was that he was not physical enough to deal with Jamie Pickett. I think Daukus is. You know, like we saw Daukus against Kevin Holland. Cool. We've seen him do other things that give me a lot of positive feelings about it. So yeah, I'm gonna go with Kyle Daukus here as well. So we are the same on all but two going into the main event.
Yep. Let's see how the main event goes. Johnny Walker versus Jamahal Hill, a.k.a. Jamahal Hill. Sweet Dreams is his nickname, not Jamahal. Walker, we'll tell you about first. 18-6, 15 knockouts, 2 submissions. He's been knocked out 3 times, submitted once. 4-3 in the UFC. He's only won 1 of his last 4 fights. He lost his last fight as well. He was another Contender Series alum, 1-0 in the Contender Series. He also has multiple championships, I think most of them in Brazil, or maybe all of them in Brazil. He used to fight at heavyweight. He's 2 inches taller than Hill, 3 inches of reach, grappling stats in his favor, plus 205. Sweet Dreams Hill, 9-1 with 1 no contest, 5 knockouts on his ledger. He lost 1 fight, and that was via knockout. He's gone 3-1 with 1 no contest in the UFC. He won via KO his last fight. He was 1-0 in the Contender Series. He's the KOP champ. He's twice more active striking than Walker, minus 270. We'll let you break down the main event first.
So first of all, I am going to dispute that his only loss is by knockout, because it was by having his arm broken in a triangle and then being punched in the face kind of next to it. Like, his arm
That's
was
right.
broken
that was
and it was
guy.
Dangling around, and for some reason they gave it a TKO. It's one of the weirdest calls I've ever seen in history. It's not a TKO. It was a submission victory. It was Paul Craig. So here's the thing. This fucking fight, nobody has a clue on how it's going to go. And for a really good reason. Johnny Walker's in it. You know what?
Yep.
Johnny Walker, for years, I believe I've described him. I described him this week on the Top Turtle podcast, and I'm positive I described him on this podcast the last time we broke down his fights. He's an agent of chaos. That's the only way to describe Johnny Walker. And he's added a new wrinkle to his chaoticness. In some fights, he comes out and throws 3 spinning back fists in a row and lands all 3 of them and wins. In some fights, he leaves his jaw up in the air and gets it cracked and then still somehow wins. In some fights now, he also decides he's a technical kickboxer and is not going to put his foot on the gas. It's so hard to predict how a Johnny Walker fight is going to go. It's damn near impossible for me. So I guess, like, you have to ask yourself, is that one fight sample of him looking tentative enough for you to doubt him? And for me, I'm going to say no. I'm actually going to pick Johnny Walker here at plus 200. The reason I'm going to do it is because I just don't know. And I've always, you know, like, I know Jamahal Hill has got good power. I know he can knock anybody out. We just saw him knock out Jimmy Crute early in a fight. But, like, also, like, he also is the type of guy who capitalizes on people making mistakes. And I actually think if Johnny Walker fights that ticky-tacky fight he fought against Thiago Santos, he might even win that. Like, he might be able to win that fight against Jamahal Hill. And if he fights all chaotic, it's a coin flip. So at the very worst, I'm getting a plus 200 fighter at a coin flip. Sure, why not? But I will warn you, there's no way this is anywhere near my recommended place.
No. Could you call Johnny Walker Mercurial, Dan?
Sure. You could call him whatever you want. I mean, right, he's just the most ridiculous dude in the UFC.
Yeah. I am going to call him a loser in this fight. I'm going to go with Hill. I saw some advanced strike. I can't remember where I saw it, unfortunately. I tweeted it, though, so check my Twitter feed, Jeff Fox Writer. So the correct Richard Mann, the guy's name, maybe? And, you know, he does advanced stat breakdowns and stuff. And, like, Hill's strike stats are just – they're very good compared to anyone, but compared to Johnny Walker, they're way, way better. And it's not just one fight where Walker's looked tentative. It's been a while now. It's been basically his last 4 or so where his style's totally been switched, either because competition's getting tougher, or he's gone to Ireland training with Connor's guy, or whatever the case is. But yeah, he seems to be a totally different fighter. I'd have a hard time picking him. Plus, I think Hill's a pretty damn good fighter. So Hill is my pick, but not a huge fan of minus 270 line. I was hoping, oh, maybe he's going to be the underdog here, but no, he's a massive favorite. So anyhow, I'll pick Hill. So that's good. We're different on the main event. That'll make things quite interesting come fight night, Dan.
I will say, I just want to dispute something you said. He did not look tentative against Ryan Spann. He did not look tentative at all against Ryan Spann. He threw – the fight only lasted 2 minutes, and he threw 25 punches.
Okay, fine. One fight he didn't look bad.
So just the Santos one, and I guess maybe a little bit of the Krylov one, but that was mostly just because he was getting out grappled. So, and again, I will not be surprised if he loses this fight. It's such a weird fight that I just don't think there's a good way to wrap your head around what's going to go down.
Yeah, and it's we've talked about it on the podcast before with him. Do we know if he's good yet? No, we still don't know if he's good.
I don't think I'll ever know if he's good.
No, that's what we were saying. He's one of those guys who, he's fought seven times in the UFC.
I don't know if it matters.
No. That's true. But at least he was fun before. Now he's not even that fun.
For only one fight, he wasn't fun.
Yep, that's all it takes, Dan. That's all it takes for the narrative to change, Dan. He's no fun. Haven't you heard?
I think he's fun still. Let's have a dream.
All right. Let's have some fun in recommended plays, because this train's rolling down the track, Dan, and we're going to head to recommended plays next. So I can always get a snicker out of Dan making that reference. So I always let you go first. So go right ahead.
All right. I'm going to start with Mario Bautista. I'm actually going to ride him as pretty much my only favorite in my recommended plays this week. I'm going to take Mario Bautista. What did you give me on the number
minus
to start?
-270.
-270. Okay, so we'll go with 55 on Mario.
Wow.
Bautista. Yeah, that's going to be the bulk of my play this week.
All right. Let me see. Let me type this down first. Make sure it's all official here, everyone. Bautista at -270 for Mr. Vreeland as I move into the mic here. All right. Let me scan the card here. I don't want to recommend anything here. I don't like this card, Dad. I don't like this card, and I don't like having to make picks here. All right. Jonathan Pierce. I'm just, like I said, I've been getting too fancy with my picks, so I'm going to go Jonathan Pierce. How much should I bet here? Let's go $40. Jonathan Pierce just to win outright at -320. I'm not going to be fancy this week, and I don't like this card also. So it's just pick winners. $40, Jonathan Pierce, JSP.
All right, I'm going to take I'm going to get a little fancier than I have in past weeks. I'm going to take David Onama, but I want him by knockout because I want the plus money on him. I'm only going to take $15 on it, though. I'm going to take $15 on David Onama KO. That's posted where I'm seeing it, +150.
+150. You got it. David Onama +150 via knockout. Let me write the KO part here. All right. Next, Bautista. Just like Dan, I'm taking Bautista. I will take I'm going to change it. JSP, I'm taking 35 on him. I'm taking 35, the same amount on Bautista. Just to win outright, -270.
All right. My next one, I'm going to go with another plus money one. I'm going to take Jim Miller. You said +150 on Jim Miller.
+145.
I'll take another 15 on Jim Miller. So I'm going to sprinkle a couple of underdog plays here around my big Mario Bautista play. So that should leave me with 15 more.
It does. All right. So I got $30 left. I'm going to put 30 on the Warrior Princess, Diana Balbita. Good number on her. So what did I say? It was -120. I'm just going to take her to win outright, and that will be my $100 right there.
I like that one too, but I'm going to go with, as I said, another underdog here with my last $15. I'll take Mark Streigel over Chaz Skelly. You gave me 175, 170?
I gave you 165, sorry.
Oh, 165, a little lower than that. Okay, so I'll take 165 on Mark Streigel at +165, $15.
Okay. All right, so that is, we've spent our $100. So we got 55, Dan's got $55 on Mario Bautista winning outright -270. He's got $15 on David Onama winning via knockout +150. He's got $15 on Jim Miller winning outright +145. $15 on Mark Streigel winning outright +165. My picks, boring ones, $35, Jonathan Pierce winning at -320. $35, Mario Bautista winning at -270. $30, Dina Balbica winning at -120. All right. Props, parlays, or you want to go right to the Degen, the Hungry Jong degen 10 times money parlay. What do you say?
Yeah, I already gave you my favorite prop here. Bet Parker Porter. Parker Porter by submission plus 650. That's a steal. Get in on that.
Yeah, no kidding. Yeah.
So that's my big one for this card. But for a big parlay here, I think you could do a pretty good job of just playing the favorites we really love. You know, you mentioned we really love Jonathan Pierce as the first one. So we'll put Jonathan Pierce along with Mario Bautista, which is one that I really liked. You know, you also really mentioned that you really like the Daniela Belbita number. So you can snag her. What was the other big? Oh, you also like Kyle Daukaus, right?
Yes. Yeah, I like him to win. Yes.
Yeah, so we'll put Kyle Daukaus in there and then closer on up with Jim Miller. So we'll take just those four favorites that we really love: Jonathan Pierce, Mario Bautista, Deanna Belbita, Kyle Daukaus, and then just pair with one underdog like Jim Miller, and that's going to give you just about exactly 10-1, actually inching towards 11-1.
There you go. And when Dan starts fumbling his words, then we know it's actually time to go. Usually it's me that does that. Now you can't talk either, then we definitely need to put this here to bed. We've given enough time to this crummy fight card that's coming up. So we got Dariush versus Makhachev coming up the week after, so that should be a bit better. So hopefully. Looking at the card, though, it's not that amazing of a card, but it's got a good main event at least. So, all right. In the meantime, anything else, Ashley? Any parting shots or words, Dan?
Nah. Follow us on Twitter, at GumbyBruin, at Jeff Fox Writer.
There you go. Bingo. And read our stuff at sportsgamblingpodcast.com, obviously. I'll let you take us home. Go ahead. Take us home.
All right, I'm Daniel Gubby Freeland. He is the scrapper, Jeff Fox. And we will catch you on Sunday.